Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hello.
This is the Board Game Bros podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I am Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And board game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games, board game design, board gaming as a hobby. You got two experts here, self-prescribed experts here, to tell you about the games we played, our favorite games. And each episode, we like to look at a single game and analyze it. We like to talk about the strategy involved in playing the game and the design that went into that. So today we are talking about a fairly crunchy, fairly rules-heavy, strategy-heavy game.
Yeah, and if you follow us on Twitter, you would have seen a post that we made, a tweet, in which I took a picture of the box of this game because I was so excited to get it.
And if you're a longtime listener of our podcast, you know that we've mentioned this game a couple times. We talked about how you're looking forward to receiving it. You finally got it. We've compared it to a particular video game.
Yes.
More than any other game, despite the fact that we've never actually finished a game.
But now we have.
Now we have, because we have finally received drumroll peas.
Brr. Food Chain Magnate.
Food Chain Magnate is the game that we received. You saw the text on Twitter, and now you're hearing us give our hot takes on it and its design. Because we got to sit down, we got to do a full playthrough, we got to see all the pieces, we got to see it to completion, and we really liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, you were a huge fan of it going into it.
Oh, yeah.
I, you know, from just the part of a game that I played a year ago, I wasn't all that interested, but after having completed a full game, I'm very interested now. This is a really cool game.
Of course, Food Chain Magnate was designed by Jerome Doman and Joris Wersinga. I'm sorry if I mispronounce those names.
As always, we're not cool enough to know how your cool names are pronounced.
Yeah, your names are way too cool for us Matt and Jeff folks over here. And it was published by Splatterspellen in 2015. Splatter is a small German publisher. And yeah, they were only recently able to do a reprint of Food Chain Magnate, which is why it just now got it. And here's a bit of a fun fact. One of the central mechanics and gameplay elements of this game is professed to be the favorite mechanic in any board game of Jamie Stegmaier of Stonemaier Games.
And he designed
Viticulture, Scythe, Charterstone, Euphoria.
Yeah, tons of very popular, very good games.
Yeah.
And this is his favorite mechanic ever to be included in a game. And we'll go into detail on that later, what that mechanic is and what it leads to in this game. But first, I want to just give a basic rundown of the strategy of this game and how it's played. So in Food Chain Magnate, each player is the CEO of a restaurant franchise attempting to make the most money from marketing and selling food and beverages to the local area. So players take turns hiring staff, training them, arranging them in their corporate structure, marketing food to nearby houses, producing food, and outselling their competition to the hungry customers. That's the basis of it, but it's much more advanced than that. So let's get into the details of how it's played and the strategy of how it's played.
Right.
So right off the bat, all you start with is a single card and a single restaurant location. Which is interesting. Normally, many other games in a similar genre where it's about building up a business, you typically start with a pool of money.
And money or any other resource.
Right. In this game, you start with no money. You only start with your CEO card and a single restaurant located on a map. And the map is a randomly assorted grid of square tiles. Each tile has a chance to have a house on it or a drink distributor on it, and it also has roads on it. And when you arrange, you arrange them all randomly, when you flip them all together and arrange them, you see how the roads line up, you see where the houses lie, and then there's tons of blank spaces on the map, and that is where you place your first restaurant location. And as the game progresses, you might eventually build more restaurant locations. You can also build more houses near your restaurant.
And you can beautify houses.
Yes, with gardens. But you essentially start with very little. Just your restaurant on the map and just your CEO card. And your CEO card does two important things. The first thing it does is it lets you hire one person every turn. And the second thing it does is it allows you to play three other cards along with it. So, and this is where we get into the corporate structure mechanic.
Yes.
So Matthew, go into the detail. What is the corporate structure mechanic?
So as Jeffrey just mentioned, that your CEO has these three sort of slots on it, branching from the bottom of the card. Mm-hmm.
And it uses these three symbols to indicate that it has these three slots.
Right. And these slots are the spaces where you can play other cards. Think of it like your actions and like dominion. Mm-hmm. It's how many cards you can play along with the CEO.
But in the flavor of the game, these extra cards are employees.
Right.
So essentially the way you start out is you're a CEO and you can only manage three people.
Right. However, you can hire management trainees that can manage two people each, and then you can also train those further to be better at managing, and they give you more management slots.
Right. So I mentioned that your CEO has one function, which is to hire new people, and let's just go over some of the examples of people that you can hire in this game.
Right. So
you already mentioned you can hire management trainee, which has more slots for managing other employees beneath him. He takes up a slot himself, but he essentially, a management trainee will convert one of your slots into two.
And it should be noted that that you can't have other management under other management. Only your CEO is what can manage managers.
Okay. But yeah, it converts that way. And you can train him. There's a trainer, which if you play him as an employee in your corporate structure for the turn, then he will allow you to take an employee that you aren't using that turn in your corporate structure and train him to a higher level. And there's a whole tree that different employees branch out in. The management trainee can become better managers. They can become a junior vice president, a vice president, and each one of those upgrades allow him to manage more people.
Yeah, and there's other things the management trainee can become, mm-hmm. to the point where that's actually the largest and most diverse tree.
Right. So there's also a recruiting girl, which does what your CEO does, which is hire an extra person. So those are good for hiring multiple people per turn. Getting a fast start would be like hiring multiple recruiting girls and then using that to really fill up the members in your company very quickly.
There is, of course, the kitchen trainee and errand boy, which provide you with food and drinks, respectively,
mm-hmm.
one per card.
Right. The kitchen trainee, when you play it in your corporate structure, you get one pizza or one burger, and the errand boy gets one drink of any kind. There's three different drinks. There's soda, lemonade, and beer. And then there's also the pricing manager and the waitress. The pricing manager will reduce the price of your products by $1, which we'll get into in a second why that's important. And the waitress collects tips. So they sort of add a little bit of extra money per turn.
And technically, the waitress makes your restaurant more friendly.
Right.
Which,
and we'll go into why that is in a second as well.
And then the last main base employee that you can get without upgrading is the marketing trainee.
Right. So the way that this game works, just to go over a little, how about you go a little bit more in detail how the corporate structure works? When it comes into play?
Right. So with the corporate structure, you have all those slots. Any you don't use help determine turn order or player order for
and
a round.
Every turn it starts with every player deciding how they're going to arrange their corporate structure for that turn.
Simultaneously.
And
each
you
of
reveal
them,
at the same you, time. You keep it to yourself what you're going to pick, how many people you're going to be using. You only have the slots that you have available to you through your CEO and your other managers. So you can't play all the cards in your hand every turn. You can only play as many as your slots would allow.
And you can choose to play fewer than the amount of cards you have. If, you know, you have the slots and you don't want to play every card. And that's because the player with the most empty slots gets to decide where they go on the turn order afterwards. Because mm-hmm. After all players reveal their corporate structure, then whoever's first in turn order takes their turn of recruiting and training and producing and marketing and all the stuff their cards actually do.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that turn order can be very important based on many different factors of how either you want to take certain actions first or you want to react to what your opponent does. There's a lot of, right, you know, a lot of sort of tension in that.
So we've talked about the recruiting girl, the trainer, the errand boy, what they do. Let's talk about the marketing trainee.
Right.
This is something that I thought was very interesting about this game, where it's not just you make burgers and sell them. You have to market your food and your drinks to the houses on the map.
Right.
Which is very cool. So, like I said, there's only so many houses on the map. They're in random places. At the beginning of the game, you place your restaurant near these houses, and then you have to market to them. And you use your marketing trainee to do that. The marketing trainee can only start a campaign, a billboard campaign. And then as you upgrade him, you get access to different kinds of campaigns. Let's go through what the different campaigns do.
Right. So, billboards, they market whatever you put on them to the adjacent houses that are touching it orthogonally. And when we say marketing what you put on them, when you play sort of one of the marketing people...
When you play a marketing person in your corporate structure, when it comes to your turn...
You choose a product to market, so burger, pizza, or one of the three drinks. And then you place the whatever the marketing structure is on the board in one of the empty spaces, the white spaces on the board. And you put that worker who's marketing sort of to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays in play for a number of turns based on whatever the card says.
Well, so the base level marketing trainee can put a campaign out for a maximum of 2 turns.
Right.
And then every level beyond that can market for an additional turn. So you choose how long you want the campaign to run. Typically, you want it to run as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be reasons why you'd want to run it shorter than that. And at the end of a turn, after everyone is gone, and after all the food has been sold to buildings that have wanted food, then you market. So every house that doesn't already have 3 different kinds of foods that it's wanting to buy, if there's a campaign that affects them, then that campaign makes them want to buy one of that kind.
It adds demand to that.
Yes, it adds a demand. So if you play your marketing trainee and you are planning on producing pizza, then you put out a billboard next to a house or 2 houses if you're lucky, and you say these 2 houses or this house is going to want to buy pizza. So you put, you say, I want 2 turns marketing pizza. At the end of the turn, each of those houses will get a little token that says that they want pizza. And then on your next turn, if you have the pizza produced, then you sell it to them. Right. But it's not just that simple. Because when you market to a house, it's not like you're marketing your food to the house. You're marketing just that kind of food to the house.
The concept of the food.
The concept of the food to the house. And in order for that house to go to you specifically and buy your food, you need to have the best value for your food. And the game has a way of calculating value that's very interesting, that utilizes the board, and it also utilizes the pricing manager that I mentioned before, as well as the waitress. So, Matthew, what is the formula for determining where a family goes to get their food?
Yes, so during the dinner time phase, families will attempt to buy the food that's available from restaurants that they can reach by going through roads. So, to clarify, some tiles with roads, the roads might not intersect or there will be like an overpass.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible that some houses would be disconnected from any given player's restaurant. But so if they can, and if the food is there and everything, then they'll choose the house that is a combination of closest and cheapest.
Right. So the way you calculate it is the base price of a food is $10. And then you subtract any price reductions, you add how many spaces away the restaurant is, and you get a number, and whoever has the smallest of those numbers, that's where the family's going to go.
So, if there is a tie, then whoever has the most waitresses takes that food.
So if there's a house in the same square as my restaurant, and I should say tile, because there's a lot of these small squares, and the board is made up of these square tiles. So if there's a house in the same tile as my restaurant and it can reach it by the road, then I have no price reduction on my food, then I get a value of 10. If you also, Matthew, have a restaurant one tile away, accessible by road, and you're also marketing at 10, then your value is 11 because it's 10 plus the one tile away. Now, if you had played a pricing manager on your turn that we're competing over this, then both of our values equal 10 because yours is 9 plus 1 and mine is 10 plus 0. So then you go into how many waitresses either player has played, and whoever has the most waitresses wins in that case.
Right. And if waitresses are equal, then it's just whoever's first in turn order.
Mm. So that's the importance of having pricing managers and waitresses. They come into play later in the game when you're actually doing this major competing over resources. But they're very important because there's not many houses on the board. Depending on how many players are playing, usually it's kept to a certain number where there's typically always a chance for competition. And as you plan your marketing and your production, you can avoid this as much as you can, but eventually in the game there comes a point where you have to compete. So it's important to think about that and to consider how you set up your corporate structure in case you want to try and take away sales from your opponent.
Right. So to be honest, from how it seemed, it did seem like tiles have about an average of 0.75 houses,
mm-hmm.
just from what I've seen of the tiles. So In a two-player game, you play a 3x3, so 9 tiles. So we had, roughly 6 houses.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So just to roughly summarize some strategies involved in this game, because we've gone into great detail about how it's played. You create a marketing train, or you market food, you produce food using your kitchen staff and your errand boys, and you recruit and train workers to add to this corporate structure. You recruit managers so you can play more people in your corporate structure.
And you sell product, which gives you money, and you need to pay salaries to your more advanced workers.
Right, if you
which
upgrade
the money
somebody,
lets you do.
Exactly. So you sell food, again, for $10 is the base price on average, and then you hire people, and each one has a salary of $5. So in order to keep them, even if you didn't play them in a turn, you have to pay them.
Right.
So you upgrade your people, you sell food, you get bigger and better advertising schemes, and then at the end of the game ends when the bank runs out of money.
Twice.
So you start with $100 in the bank, and then at the beginning of the game, each player actually gets to choose how much is in the reserve of the bank. So it could be, at the minimum, each player can choose 100. At the most, each player can choose 300. So in our two-player game, there is anywhere from $200 to $600 in the bank for this refill. And once that second supply is depleted, that's the end of the game. Oh, I think I cut you off when we were talking about marketing strategies.
Oh, yeah.
So what are the other types of marketing strategies?
Well, I did want to mention one more thing about the reserve while we're on that topic.
Okay.
Which is that when the reserve cards are revealed, how much money gets added, because normally they're hidden during the game until they get added to the bank, that when they get revealed, each reserve card also has a number of management slots on it, similar to your managers or your CEO. And the most common amount of management slots appearing on those, that is what the CEO can do from that point on.
Right.
So the $100 has 2 slots, meaning if all players or most of the players choose the $100 card, then from then on, everybody's CEOs will have only 2 management slots.
Mm-hmm. And then 200 is 3 and 300 is 4.
Right.
So there's a chance that your CEO gets upgraded, downgraded, or they stay the same
right.
for the back part of the game.
So marketing. We mentioned billboards.
There's also mailboxes, which market to all the houses in one open area. So I guess one area surrounded by roads.
Yeah,
is
one
another
city
way of putting
block
that.
Is the way they put it in the
one
rule
city,
book.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So if there's multiple houses in they're connected by open white spaces, then that's where you put a mailbox in there, and it'll market to both of those. There's the airplane.
The airplane,
banner.
Yeah.
There's the airplane campaign, which is like those banners that airplanes pull in the sky. Those you place on the edge of the board, and they cover a number of rows of squares, and any house that they pass over gets marketed
right.
to.
Right, they fly in a straight line.
Right, and then the radio broadcast is the last form of marketing. You place that on a tile, and that tile and the adjacent tiles all get marketed to. And so they get more and more reach as you upgrade
technically
them.
It's not just adjacent, it's all surrounding.
Oh, okay. Eight
around the
all
tile
surrounding tiles. So in a two-player game, that can hit every single house on the map.
Right.
Because you work in a 3x3 map.
Right.
And it's still a good portion of the map in a multiplayer game. So we talked about that. There's one more important thing that we have to talk about, and that's milestones.
Yes.
And these are possibly the most important thing about the game.
This is also what I think is a really cool mechanic about this game.
Right. So as you play the game, you perform these certain actions, you know, you hire people, you train them, you produce food, you market, and you are rewarded for doing that first among all the players in the game with these milestones. So each milestone has a victory condition that you have to perform in order to achieve the milestone, and then they give you a permanent bonus for the whole game. Now, what's interesting about the milestones, there's a couple examples. For example, if you are the first person to market burgers, pizza, or some kind of drink, then you permanently get $5 bonus from selling that kind of food or drink for the rest of the game.
Also, if you're the first to market with a billboard, then your marketing staff costs no money to pay their salary,
mm-hmm.
and that's the only way you can have marketing campaigns last infinitely.
Right. Some milestones give you bonus cards. The first person to produce a burger or to produce a pizza gets a free burger cook or pizza cook. The first person to hire three people in a single turn gets two bonus management trainees, which is pretty big. There's a couple other things. The first person to lower prices gets a permanent price lowering to all their food that they sell. If you are the first person to have $20, you can see the bank reserve cards. There's a whole bunch of these milestones.
Right.
You get the idea.
And
the thing about milestones is that if you fail to get them, the turn that the first player is able to get them, then they become unavailable for the rest of the game. They're first come, first serve per turn.
Right. However, if you and another player both produce a drink in the same turn, and nobody's gotten that milestone yet, then you both get the milestone.
Exactly. So the idea is the first person to get it gets the milestone. If anybody else is able to get it the same turn, they also get the milestone. But after that turn ends, the milestone is gone forever.
And
the milestones are very good. They're permanent bonuses at your company for the rest of the game. And so losing out on them is an important deal. So to talk about the strategy of this game, I definitely recommend you always be aware of what milestones there are and how fast you can achieve them. And you should also pay attention to what your opponents are gunning for milestone-wise so that you can either plan to get different milestones in later turns because you won't be able to match their speed, or you can try and match their speed and get the milestones before they are unavailable for the rest of the game.
Right, and this is one of those things where going second or later in a turn can help, because that means you can react to what your opponent recruits and try to see if they're going for a milestone and react appropriately.
Right. If they're going quickly for a marketing trainee because they're going to be trying to market a certain kind of food first or a certain kind of drink first, then you know you can go for that marketing trainee also. Also, if you're both playing your marketing trainee, then you might want to go second to see what they market food-wise. And you can either try and jump on the same bandwagon, or you can go for something else to try and split your two strategies. They're important. You should always consider which ones you're going for, because permanent bonuses are going to win you the game. If everything is even, if you consider both of your strategies to be equally successful, then the person with the most of these passive bonuses wins, just in general, if you think about it simply like that. This game forces you almost to think about two turns ahead. And so always the game heavily rewards you for thinking at least that far ahead. You should think even further, honestly, because this is one of those games where the turns feel like you don't do very much in a turn. You only have so many slots to perform certain actions, and you're never going to be using everyone in your company on a single turn. So it's important to think multiple turns ahead, because you're going to be doing a couple things now and a couple things later and a couple things later. And in order to do those things in the proper order and achieve your goals, you need to think that far ahead.
Right, yeah. You know, it's funny. I remember watching a video of somebody talking about the strategy of this game, and he brought up how he would write down the first couple turns for any given strategy that he tried to play or planned out, just because, like, those first few turns can make a huge difference and pretty much steer you for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. So let's go a little bit into the design of this game.
Right.
One thing that I think is cool about this game is it tells you that you need to think three turns ahead, or two turns ahead, rather. In how you play the game, because you need to hire your marketing trainee and your kitchen trainee or your errand boy, the person that produces the food. You need to hire them one turn, the next turn you market, the next turn you sell. So in that mechanic, it's saying this is how many turns ahead you need to think in order to make money. And it instills that in you time after time, because that's the general flow of the game is hire someone, market a food, produce the food so you can sell it that turn. And you do have to sell it that turn, because in this game, if you don't have the fridge milestone, which you get by throwing away food, then you throw away food at the end of every turn. So you can't, like, produce some burgers and then keep them for a later turn, unless you were the first person to produce a burger and throw it away or something like that. So you need to think two turns ahead. The game is designed so that you have to think two turns ahead. And after doing that so many times, then it makes your strategies more complex, more developed. It makes you think a little bit longer for each of your turns. Consider what you're going to be doing. Consider who you're hiring. It's not just about hiring the marketing and then the producing and then actually producing it and getting the money. It's about hiring a trainer one turn and then spending one turn hiring a management trainee and then training him into many other different areas.
I do think it's cool that on the topic of sort of teaching the player how to plan or strategize the game, I think it's cool that a lot of the big milestones that have huge effects are the ones that say first to do something, but they're also first to do the important things.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the fridge is a big one that is sort of like that, but not as much, whereas, like, first to market with a billboard, first to train, first to hire three or more people in one turn. Those have big outcomes, which are, you know, infinite in free marketing. And trainer lets you get pay three salaries for free if you train, for the first to train. And, you know, getting management trainees for free. So it ends up, like, sort of help, sort of guiding you into, like, these good strategies, good openers, by outright showing these powerful things on the cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good that the game includes these milestones as a teaching mechanism for the people who are unfamiliar with the game. Usually the problem with these very complicated games is it's difficult to understand the avenue into a successful strategy.
The objectives.
Right, and this is a pretty complicated game. So having, you know, outright these multiple piles of cards that tell you, you know, what's good. They're not going to win you the game individually, and they don't say anything close to, like, this will win you the game. But it's like these objectives are, you can tell that they're very good, and you should go for them first. And so that just leaves it up to you to figure out exactly how to go for them, which ones you need to go for first, and you'll see other players pick up other objectives as you play. And so that'll help you learn, like, to plan what you're doing so that you can be hitting these milestones at the same time or sooner than other players.
Right, and I also think it's funny that the less important milestones have smaller lines of text or fewer lines of text. So, first waitress played, not a huge deal. Just one line with each waitress gets +$2. Or first pizza produced, not something you want early, just as plus one pizza cook. Whereas the billboard one and all the other marketing are like 2 to 3 lines.
Hmm.
And the first to train someone is 2 lines. The freezer is 3 lines. So I do think that is pretty cool.
Although I think that the marketing is pretty... First to market a certain kind of food is a pretty important one. And right. That's a short one.
Well, those are 2 lines, at least on the back of the... Oh, that reminds me. The game has these rules reminders
mm-hmm.
that we are luckily able to use as an aid for this podcast. But the marketers, or the reminders, basically show everything you need to remember about the game.
Right. They put the whole turn order on the front.
Including that formula for how to determine where the customers buy food.
Mm-hmm. In the, you open it up, and in the center, they have a list of every employee available in the game.
And what they upgrade into and from.
And what they do.
Yeah.
And then on the back, they have a list of every milestone.
As well as each of the 4 kinds of marketing.
And the whole thing looks like a menu.
Oh yeah, that's a nice little bit of graphic design.
So yeah, this game has some pretty good graphic design. This takes like the Monopoly aesthetic and uses it in the best possible way. Because it's right. like the nostalgia of like old time diners right. and like the first McDonald's and stuff like that.
The illustrations are like that, I don't know what era that is, but like that old timey like...
It's like the 50 ad yeah. renderings. They're like 50s ad renderings.
It's like what you'd see in like Fallout games.
They're drawn with like an ink pen. They're very stylized. They look like what's that guy? The Norman Rockwell.
Rockwell.
They look like, I mean, they're like comic book Norman Rockwell or characters. Like they look like Dennis the Menace.
Or like there's this little pizza that looks like one of those Let's Go to the Lobby
food things. Yeah, they got faces on the pizza.
Yeah, it's all very stylized, very fun.
Yeah, very, very retro, nostalgic look.
But,
and again, like this reminder thing looks like a menu. And it's got a literal menu of people to add to your company on the inside, which is pretty funny.
While we mentioned graphic design, it is worth noting that the cards in the game are color-coded based on effects.
Mm-hmm.
So marketing is bright blue. Price reduction is sort of a pinkish, orangish.
Food and drinks are similar, but the food is a dark green and the drinks are a light green. Management is all black cards.
Gray is sort of like recruiting and training, and it also deals with salaries.
Mm-hmm. And then they have, the waitress is purple, and so is the new business developer and the CFO.
I think purple's like a miscellany.
No, color. I would say purple has to deal with, ways of getting extra money.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
So the waitress obviously gives you tips. The new business developer places houses and gardens, so it places more houses that you can sell to, and a garden will double the price of the food that you sell to a house.
And then the CFO just gives you flat cash bonus.
Yeah, it gives you flat
50%. Well, not flat, it's 50%.
It gives you 50% extra cash for each thing you sell for that round. And then there's red cards, which are the local manager and the regional manager. Both of those allow you to place extra restaurants.
Right.
The local manager, you place a restaurant with a coming soon sign on it. So that it takes a turn to come into effect. Or it takes a while to come into effect. The regional manager lets you put a restaurant in immediately. And the graphic design's real great.
With the color coding, here is like my one sort of qualm with the game, or one of my qualms, is that with the upgrade tree, the management trainee not only goes into further managers, but it also goes into those new business developer and CFO and the local manager. And they can become, they can adjust prices with the luxuries and discount manager.
So,
and they can become like HR, recruiting manager, and better trainers. So they can branch out into all these other colors. And I do think that's kind of off-putting. It's hard to remember like how it upgrades sometimes.
I think it's
I do
cool.
understand it because like, I do think it makes sense that you get this upgrade flow of like, you upgrade a management trainee once so you have an extra slot, and then that can further upgrade later on into something that's good late game. It makes sense from that point, from like a, you know, a balancing point.
I think it does three things. I'll say three things. The first is that it makes sense because these are upper level positions, and so only a manager would upgrade into these unique job positions, you know, like a coach or a regional manager or something like that.
Right, that is a good flavor
reason. So there's kind of a flavor reason there. Another reason, it's an asymmetry to it that I like. It's not just the pricing manager evolves into the luxuries manager, which evolves into the discount manager. And it's not the recruiting girl evolves into the recruiting manager. It's like all of these just stem from the management training.
And I guess thinking back on it, it does a way of, like, telling new players that the management trainee is a good, safe recruit.
See, that was my third point.
Yeah, if you don't know what else to recruit, management trainees are usually good because they can become other useful stuff.
Exactly. And you need three because you can only have... Your CEO can manage other managers, but managers can't manage other managers. So you can only have up to three of these black management cards in your corporate structure below your CEO. So extra ones... you need them at least so that if you play all three, you have another one that you can upgrade into other things.
Right. For the most part, every other type of card works good in multiples or works well in multiples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can lower your prices further to undercut more. You can play more errand boys or kitchen trainees or whatever to get more, you know, product.
It also makes sense, at least for the pricing manager, because the other people in the pink category... the pricing manager reduces the price by 1, the luxuries manager increases the price by 10, and the discount manager decreases the price by 3. So it's kind of weird, like, why would that be the progression for a person?
Right.
Like, I start by decreasing by 1, and then I increase by 10, and then I decrease by 3, like, as I evolve. Like, that doesn't make very much sense. It makes more sense for those to be on separate trees. And just to actually go into a little bit of detail on what the luxuries manager does, it's just one of those, this is kind of like one of those Johnny cards. That's like an interesting standout thing. Like, why would that be good? Because you need to have the lowest price in order to sell to a household. Because so if you have the luxuries manager and all of your stuff costs $10 more, that means that literally any other player on the board that hasn't played the luxuries manager will sell to the family instead of you, because they don't even have to play, you know, like anything. Even if a family has to go all the way around the board through the roads to get to a different restaurant, it still probably comes out to less than your cost plus 10.
Though there is a catch.
Right. Well, the reason it's good is because if you can sell something that nobody else can sell, then you can upcharge it because nobody else is going
to
compete with you on
it. To be fair, technically, houses, they want to buy everything that they want to buy at once.
That's true.
So if you market one pizza, one burger, one, say, lemonade to a house, and nobody else has those exact combinations of resources... then you can sell them all for, you know, a huge inflated price.
Right. So if you're the only one with access to a food, or if you're the only one with access to a specific combination of food, and you can plan that, again, a couple turns ahead based on what's being marketed to the house through different advertising schemes,
and
you then collect it and then sell it.
The milestones, actually sort of, they want you to diversify against your opponents. Because, you like we mentioned, you get more money if you have the first drink or first burger or first pizza marketed milestones. So if your opponent gets first burger marketed and you don't get it that same turn, you automatically would want to go for pizza. And so that's sort of a really quick way of telling the player, like, hey, try something else.
True. That's a good point.
Another thing about the sort of layout of the employee cards, I don't like the way it's laid out, because if you look at it from, like, so looking at it from top to bottom, you see this big convoluted tree, and I mean, obviously management trainees are important, and I feel like the rest of the tree is laid out fine, but then it goes the recruiting girl and trainer, errand boy, marketing trainee, kitchen trainee. I think with the kitchen trainee being at the bottom, and usually when people set it up, it's, like, at the bottom of all of the employee cards, or it's on the left or whatever. I think because of that, people tend to gravitate towards Kitchen Trainee on their first playthrough, because it's, like, the one that's front and center.
Mm-hmm. And it also makes sense, like, you're playing a game about food.
Right, you make that's food. The other thing I was wanting to mention about that is, Food Chain Magnate does this weird thing where its design goes against gamer sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
In that, yeah, normally in a game where you need resources to spend on something, you want to get those resources, like, turn one as fast as possible. But the thing is that those resources, the food and whatever, isn't as important usually as having the management infrastructure and the employee infrastructure.
Plus, if you produce food too early, then you get the first to produce a burger or pizza milestone, which provides you with a free burger cook or pizza cook.
That costs you $5 at the end of the turn.
Exactly. If you make it too early, then you can't keep it, because it costs a salary, and if you can't pay the salary, then you have to fire the person. Right. So it's worse to do those early. It's better to wait on those until you can actually benefit from that milestone.
But at the same time, aesthetically, when you look at this little menu insert thing of all the tree,
mm-hmm.
there the rows with five cards going across it, are at the top, which is aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm. And so, I suppose they had to put the recruiting girl and the trainer there because it lines up with the tree that the manager expands into.
And the HR director coach.
Yeah. You know, this is sort of one of the only ways they could have done it. The only way I could see them doing it different, maybe they swap the errand boy and the marketing trainee so that it forces you to compare the kitchen trainee to the errand boy.
I would honestly say just invert the whole thing.
Fair enough.
Put the management trainee at the bottom, then the waitress line, then the pricing manager, recruiting girl, so on. And then after trainer and recruiting girl, put marketing trainee, errand boy, kitchen trainee.
All right, well,
either way.
So there's that. Let's see. Yeah, and I think, although this is kind of a theme in the game, that it is very punishing. You know, and it's like, you know, they put the kitchen trainee at the bottom, and you kind of are drawn to it, you're forced to look at it, it's separated a little bit from everybody else. So it's like, and it's punishing to play it too early. And same thing, if you fail to keep up with the milestones, if you're too far behind an opponent with the milestones and you miss out just one turn away, you know, that could be a huge detriment to the rest of the game. It could really interrupt strategies. It's kind of difficult in this game, too, to switch strategies because it takes a while for you to recruit and train and market. You know, it takes so many turns. So if your three-turn strategy is disrupted on turn two, it's going to take you another three turns to get back into a new strategy. And somebody else whose just strategy wasn't disrupted is going to keep gaining tempo. So it's a very punishing game. For that, it's a very spiky game.
You know, personally, I like the fast-paced, like, impactful turns more so than I like slow developmental turns into big pack impactful turns. Because, like, it feels like a lot of other engine builders, like Scythe, you know, you spend your first couple turns producing, like, two resources at a time, not really doing a whole lot, and then there comes a swing turn where you suddenly start doing a lot every turn.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like that Food Chain Magnate has, like, from turn one, you're kind of in there going, you know, just in turbo mode. Because every turn feels so impactful.
Sure, and that appeals to you as personally. A gamer and a lot of other gamers with a similar spike mentality. Right. They like to outplay their opponents through superior strategy and thinking, and this game is all about that strategy and thinking. Somebody who's just feeling it out can fall very far behind.
Right.
Can get seriously punished, similar to how the kitchen trainee functions just as a thing. Mm. The whole game in its strategy and design is both rewarding, extremely rewarding for people who can plan that far ahead, and extremely punishing to those who can't.
And to be fair, I think that comes into play with, like, how you market your game and present it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about, like, in Agricola, how that game is very punishing, but it has this bright aspect. I think the thing about Food Chain Magnate that is okay with its punishingness is how bland it looks.
True.
How, you know, players would probably be more gravitated to something colorful like Sushi Go or something more visually interesting like, you know, Dominion or Catan.
Yeah,
or,
it does have, I mean, it has the color-coded cards, but all the other illustrations are black and white.
Right.
But it does have that kind of cute nostalgia to it.
Right.
Although I think it's kind of funny, it has a lot of similar illustrations to Monopoly, which is also a very punishing game.
Yeah.
So maybe it kind of borrows off of that.
Maybe. I think you get what you expect.
Right.
So, design-wise, there is two more things I want to talk about that are sort of tied up.
Let's do them quickly, because this is starting to get to a long episode. Right.
So, these tie together, and that is the game has a lot of mechanics and sort of concepts that are very elegantly put and elegantly implemented. So, elegance in game design is typically referred to just, like, how you are able to implement, you know, mechanics or ideas without too many components or space or wordiness.
That's a good point.
And there is one thing. Well, so I do want to say the table space for Food Chain Magnate is huge.
Yeah.
It took up like our whole table.
You have to have a lot of piles of cards for both all the employees and all the milestones.
But that's not necessarily the elegance problem. So some examples of elegance.
All the food costs $10. It's very easy to calculate that and calculate which house they go to.
For the game specifically, there are two things I had in mind.
Okay.
So the milestones are a great way of tying upgrades to actions within the game instead of resource costs. And I think it's interesting because, like, other games will have similar types of upgrades. Like, Scythe has your big board with pieces you move around.
Right, but it adds that extra step of having to collect the resource and then spend it on this particular thing.
And, well, I mean, the thing is, like, visually, those are a ton of these tiny pieces in there. Food Chain Magnate, it's just this row of cards that you just get one when you do the thing. And it also, it that mechanic also adds the whole, you know, cutthroat, taking it before other players. And it's not like they had to have a separate board for each player that says, like, get this only if another player hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does a lot with only a few components per milestone. The other one is the game length and the reserve. That does a great job of both pacing the game so that you can have this option for optional game length and adding an element of strategy to that because you might want a different number of management slots to go with that, and it does a good job of adding that whole, you know, if it goes longer, then you get more management slots. If it's quicker, you get fewer, just right there on the cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, like 3 cards per player, so 15 cards altogether that does all that, instead of having to do all these, like, sliders or stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we've talked about Scythe is a similar game.
Yeah,
it's a game with these incremental engine building turns that add up over a length of time.
Sort of an area control concept.
A good point, too. I also was... This game kind of reminded me of Power Grid, which is another game. There's sort of an indirect competition over buyers and customers, sort of. But you're instead of building up restaurants and marketing food, you're building up a network of power plants, and you're spreading that power to multiple cities. And it's kind of funny, the cities have, like, if I remember correctly, the cities have, like, a power ask to them, and you sort of have to say, like, I'm going to power that city, and then you have to produce the power with the power plants in order to fulfill the city's wants, kind of like in this game, how you're fulfilling a house's wants of what kind of food they want to get. And if you fail, then that's a huge punishment against you. And it's indirect, so it's like in this game, you're not stealing, you know, from your opponent's money. You're stealing customers from them by having a better product. And it's similar in that where you're stealing, like, the better power plants before your opponent can get to them, stuff like that.
Right. There is a card game that's pretty light, but it has a similar marketing setup, which is Boss Monster. It's a game where each player is sort of like a video game boss, and adventurers and heroes appear, and each hero has a type of loot that they really want. So, like, the wizard wants scrolls and books, the cleric wants holy figures, stuff like that. And when you're building your dungeon full of traps, each trap also adds loot to your dungeon, and the adventurers go to the dungeon with the most loot of the type they want. So there's a similar, like, setting up a market and then bringing in whatever to that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
That's Food Chain Magnate. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you for listening.
If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook @BG Bros Cast. If you want to find our website, what's that website?
www.bgbcast.com.
Indeed, that's where you can find where we post all of our new episodes. If you're also in the mood of just going to random websites or social media accounts and listening to different podcasts that we just tell you about, there's also Entertain the Geeky. They have a website, entertainthegeeky.com, and they have a podcast called Entertain the Geeky. They have another one called Nerd News. In both of those, they talk about all things nerd culture. They're our friends Chris and Roger. They've been nerds their whole lives. They're very passionate about being nerds, just like we're passionate about board games.
And those passions are combining, because they are also in partnership with us for Entertain the Geeky Games.
Right, which is our board game company. We currently have one product available. It is Merle's Truck Stop in Maine, the one-page role-playing game available on entertainthegeeky.com. Right now, for free, you have to use a promo code, we have learned.
Promo code GEEKY.
So use that promo code GEEKY, GEEKY. Yep. For a free copy of Merle's Truck Stop in Maine right now for a limited time.
It should also be noted that the base price has raised to $5.
Right, so get it while it's free, because after this is over with, its price is going up. And it's going up because we are trying to fund our very own board game company. We want to produce more board games. We have so many fun ideas that we want to share with you all. And so we are increasing the price, and we're also going to do a Kickstarter starting May 1st. That Kickstarter will be to fund the founding of our board game company and also produce our very first board game, which is a card game called Conniving Cooks.
Conniving Cooks is a bluffing and deduction card game for 2 to 6 players, in which each player plays as a server at a high-class restaurant. And to test your wits and your skill, the cooks have decided to pit you against each other. You must serve the correct dishes to the correct guests, and try not to serve the wrong dishes while tripping up your opponent so that they serve the wrong dishes to the wrong guests.
All right. Thanks for listening again, everybody.
Thank you for listening.
Look forward to next week when we discuss a new game.
And follow us on Twitter, because, you know, we'll be announcing stuff about our Kickstarter and some other stuff going forward. So
yeah, we put out a lot of announcements on Twitter, so definitely follow us there if you're interested in keeping updated. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.